Welcome to the Anxiety at Work podcast. I'm Chester Elton, and this is my co-author and dear friend, Adrian Gostick.
We hope the time you're going to spend with us will help remove the stigma of anxiety and mental health in the workplace and your personal life. We invite experts from the world of work and life to give us ideas and, most importantly, tools to deal with anxiety.
We want to thank our sponsors, Life Guides. The holiday season is upon us, and that can elicit a range of emotions for people. It's also a time to connect with those that we care about, and in the context of our businesses at this time, to reflect and plan on what is to come in the coming year. With this in mind, our wonderful sponsor, Life Guides, is offering a holiday special for leaders to ensure their executive teams have the resources they need in and outside the workplace. You can offer this amazing platform and unlimited support for up to 50 people for just $3,000. Reach out today for the support of your culture and in this caring season. Go to the link, and the link is lifeguides.com/schedule-a-demo, and then in the checkout, type in Holiday Guides 50. Now, Life Guides provides you with a life guide to walk through the day-to-day stressors for you and for your executives. It really is a fabulous program. So take advantage of this for only $3,000 for up to 50 people. All you got to do is type in Holiday Guides 50. Over to you, Adrian.
And we also want to thank our sponsor, Go Happy Hub. Go Happy Hub is the most inclusive and timely way to communicate directly with your frontline employees and your candidates. And they have more than 95% plus open rates. Why? Because they're using text. So with Go Happy Hub, you can send text messages directly from corporate, enable permissions for your frontline leaders to communicate with their teams. They can send notes of gratitude, logistical updates, LTOs, new hire introductions, etc. Easily, you can get the right message to the right people with simple segmentation by location, job type, etc. And now if you tell them Adrian sent you, you get 60 days free trial. You gotta love that. That's Go Happy Hub.
Should I be offended that they don't say and or Chester?
Yeah, it's probably.
Adrian.
Yeah, I would.
I think I'm going to take that personally. Hey, our guest today is our new friend, Erica First. Erica is founder of Moodily, which offers science-backed mood management solutions for the workplace that help improve employee performance and well-being while reducing burnout. She has a master's degree in behavioral and organizational psychology from London Metropolitan University, and prior to forming Moodily, spent 20 years in advertising. Hey, so did I. So we've got more in common than I thought, Erica. Most notably, she was the global advertising media and digital director at Ray-Ban, some of the world's greatest sunglasses, without a doubt. Well, listen, welcome to the show, Erica. We're delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Hey, you know, we are delighted to chat with you today. We're fascinated by your background, Erica. You know, so accomplished. And then as you write about, you say, for background for everybody else, in 2015, you were hospitalized after suffering from stress-related vision loss. You became interested in studying the impacts of burnout on employees. In fact, you even did grad studies in the neuroscience of mental health. So can you walk us through this career pivot you went through and how you got to this place where you're helping others now with their wellness?
Sure, I'd love to. And actually, it's funny because if you had told me in 2015 that I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have told you you're insane. So, you know, I have to absolutely embrace and call out the wonder that is life sometimes. And how actually something that was really frightening and unsettling ended up actually being a really pivotal moment in my life and in my own development. And so basically what happened is I woke up one morning and I couldn't see out of my right eye. And the thing is, I also want to underline this because I loved my job. I adored my job. I adored my team, my bosses. I was working on the best brand in the world, making beautiful things. So, you know, burnout is definitely something that hits people who are unhappy with their jobs or maybe feel stifled. But it can also happen to people who are loving their jobs and really enjoying it. So I had woken up this morning and I couldn't see out of my right eye. And I was going to a meeting with a whole bunch of lawyers where we had to read this contract. And they looked at me so funny because I kept covering my eye to see, like, could I see or not see? And, you know, it looked like I was kind of like making fun of the meeting. But I really you know, I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I went to the hospital. They checked me in. They did every test in the book. I felt like I was on an episode of House MD. And at the end of the day, they were like, you are in perfect health. What's happened, we think, is sort of like a domino reaction from your lifestyle, from being overly stressed and just operating at those levels for such an extended period of time. So I took some time off, and actually my definition of taking time off was I decided to renovate an apartment I had bought, which actually made me realize that I wasn't stressed before. but I came across, I had entered into contact with, neuroscience in that period, and, it just, my mind exploded listening to some of the neuroscientists speak and seeing their work. And so I became very passionate about it. And then I had another sort of situation where a dear friend of mine commits suicide. And one of the things that he mentioned in his letter was that, you know, he never felt really comfortable about talking about this stuff with anybody. And he was in a creative field and someone who was relatively famous. And so it was kind of like people in my position aren't allowed to feel weak, aren't allowed to have problems. And when they do, they don't have anywhere to go. And so I kind of had this idea that I was sort of like marinating in my head that I wanted to do something with my tribe, which people I identified with, creative professionals, people in the professional workplace, that would somehow allow them to get closer to mental health benefits. However, sort of going around circumventing some of the hot buttons that would keep them away, because we know a lot of people can still feel stigma around the word mental health or therapy, or even stress makes some people feel like, no, I'm fine, you know, I'm strong. So I saw, I got an invitation for this program to join the postgrad program at King's College on neuroscience and psychology of mental health. And I had no idea what I was going to do with it, but I knew I had to take the class or take the program. So I signed up, and that's when I sort of came across the neuroscientific dynamics of stress and how stress causes, or how it's caused, what it does to your body, and what all the mechanisms are. And there was a technique that they used in emotional testing, which they called mood induction. They would bring people into the clinic because, you know, you can't test in real time for emotion variants. You'd have to have a scientific team like waiting in your corner for you to be in a bad mood. So they bring you in, they give you these mood inductions, which would either put you in a bad mood, put you in a great mood, put you in a sad mood or a calm mood. They'd run their tests and then they would return you to normal, so to speak. And then they would compile the information. And I said, okay, well, if you can do that in a clinical setting, why can't you do that in real life? It's emotion manipulation on command. That sounds like a solution, ultimately. And I did some digging into what this mood induction was. And it turns out it was like creative materials, basically. And I was reading it and I said, okay, well, I have 20 years of award-winning experience in making creative materials. I now have the science that I understand the dynamics of how stress works. So maybe I could put together a team or a tool where I use creative materials scientifically designed to help people stop the mechanisms of stress in real time in a package that's palatable, let's say, to even a more resistant customer. And that's where Moodily was born. And then from there, I love to teach and I love to speak because it's actually so important to learn about the dynamics. So I add on also, I do a lot of guest speaking for companies at their programs and stuff, and even coaching one-on-one. So it's kind of a suite of solutions, as I say.
That's amazing. You know, the thing that you just said that I thought was so interesting is, so often when we think about burnout and when we think about being overwhelmed, it's because we hate our jobs.
Yeah.
You immediately go to the negative. I really like the fact that you said, no, I loved my job. In fact, I loved it so much, I went blind in my right eye. I
mean, yes. It's just,
you know, the job that you loved was literally killing you. Yeah.
And I was very lucky because after I left the company, it went through some very severe management changes, which was, I don't want to say it was a gift to me. Obviously, it was they're part of their process. But if the company had stayed the way it was, I would have gone back within a few months. So it was kind of that push I needed to really carve out a new path for myself.
Well, yeah. What's a miracle too is that the doctors that they were treating you actually knew what this was, because we hear so many times that they just don't know, or they make a misdiagnosis. Yeah.
Well, it was funny because they actually said it to me almost like a joke. You know, they're like, "Well, there's nothing wrong with you, so it must be stress."
Yeah. I don't know if I'm in with my doctor and I'm going through all this trauma that I'd want them to joke about my condition. I mean, I guess it beats crying, right? Laughing is better than crying. Which brings us to our next question, by the way. You've written lately about this idea of toxic positivity. Not two words that you normally would put together, and yet through the pandemic, we've been hearing more and more about it. You know, can you walk us through the concept of how we might react when we find ourselves in the toxic positivity trap?
Is it positivity or productivity?
Toxic positivity is what I've got in my notes.
Okay. So maybe productivity.
No, toxic
productivity. Oh,
well, hang on. Let's go back and we'll make sure we know this.
I can answer both because I just wrote an article on toxic productivity. But there, why don't I answer both?
Okay. Which one would you rather do? And we can go and edit this.
Well,
productivity?
Toxic productivity is more in line with the stress mechanism. Toxic positivity is the idea that being happy is a pressure in and of itself.
So that's where we were going, but let's go to your expertise.
No. Yeah. I'm happy. I read it as productivity, but that may just have been my bad.
Well, you've got that bad eye. So.
Indeed. Talk about seeing what you want to see. No, I can talk about toxic positivity. That's fine.
Okay, so do we want to lead in again? We'll do an edit here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. You know, it leads us into our next question, which is you've been writing lately and a lot of talk in the pandemic about toxic positivity. It's an idea that's emerged, you know. And can you walk us through the concept of how we might react when we find ourselves in that toxic positivity trap?
Well, toxic positivity is kind of when you feel obligated to be happy all the time. I do teach, a lot of what I teach is about, about being aware of the positive, because actually our brain has a negativity bias and it loves the negative. It goes there faster. And there's also some research that shows that for every negative thing, negative thought, negative word, you need 5 positive just to balance it out. That's how dramatic it is. Now, where toxic positivity comes in is when you absolutely refuse to feel anything but positive. It's like, no, it's fine. It's all going to be good. Which, to be perfectly honest, from a neuroscientific point of view, works. If where you don't point your attention to doesn't exist for your brain. So there's kind of a double negative there. But if, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind, literally. So if you refuse to get upset about something, you don't get upset about it. Now, I personally don't believe this is a healthy state of being. And so I espouse more of a situation of emotional resilience, where you're able to accept when the negative comes, because it always will. But you're able to then navigate out of that, which is sort of the healthier way to respond to it, as opposed to just being like, no, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be happy. We're going to enjoy this.
Yeah. Can I jump in just really quick? Do you think this is what happened to your friend that ended up taking his life? Is that he got caught in that positivity trap that he couldn't admit or talk to people about being sad or struggling? Can that be a really dangerous downside to the positivity trap?
Well, he did, because he was a very successful photographer, and he was part of kind of like a high fashion group, and he didn't love it. There was also some situations where he came from a specific religious background. He was homosexual. So there were all sorts of identity questions, not feeling accepted with the community in which he found himself, even in the community that he chose, which was, you know, sort of the creative fashion. So I don't there was definitely a veneer of having to put on a mask with his family, put on a mask with his professional group, put, you know, so it constantly sort of a disengagement between who he felt himself to be and who he was playing in the world, which I think he just got very tired of. I mean, he spoke of just being exhausted of the weight of having to act all the time.
And when we have to hide who we are, there's very few things that are more stressful, more anxiety inducing. So let's turn to the positive of you actually write a lot about creating good habits in our book Anxiety at Work. We talk about this. So can you give us a few reasons why it's important to create good habits with our wellness, and maybe give us some examples of how we go about this?
Absolutely. And actually, I can give you the one greatest reason why you should have positive habits, is that whatever behavior you repeat, whether it's motoric, like walking, running, whatever, food, behavioral responses, the brain rewires itself to make those behaviors automatic, because it wants to automate as much of your day as possible so that you are alert for new threats coming in. This is our brain's job, is to make sure that at the end of the day, we're alive. It doesn't actually care if you're happy or not happy. That's not its job. You're just supposed to be breathing by the time you get to bed. And so it tries to automate all of our behaviors. And so you can automate negative behaviors, or you can automate positive behaviors. When I discovered that, that was probably the most life-changing piece of information I came across. And one of the things that it's like, it'll be my thing you need to, what's your take, one takeaway? That's it. Some of the good behaviors you want to have, one thing I think of that I know a lot of people deal with is, obviously, sleep is one of the most important things to feeling well, having your brain properly rested. It affects your mood. It affects everything. If you don't sleep well, your whole life is impacted. But we tend to have this very bad habit of taking our phones to bed with us. And doing a last check of, it's like, I did all my work, let me just spend 20 minutes on Instagram, or check out some reels, or check out that video. And what this does is it sends your brain completely mixed messages, because on one hand, your brain's like, oh, okay, we're powering down, it's bedtime. And on the other hand, you're stimulating your brain, A, with the blue light from the phone, but also because you're looking at new things. So your brain's like, oh, okay, so we're not sleepy anymore. And then it's like you enter into that black hole of the phone where you mean to spend 10 minutes and then it's an hour and a half later. I recently discovered Reels on Instagram, right? And the first few days is like, where did my life go? You know, you just keep going and going and going. And I thought it was 5 minutes and it had been 90. So one of the key things that I would say to people is, do not let your phone anywhere near your bedtime routine, and definitely not in the bed with you. Like, as soon as you hit that, it needs to be off and set for the morning.
Yeah, boy, I can really relate to that sleep thing. And you know, the danger with your phone is it's your alarm clock. Right?
Yes.
So you do have it next to you. So anyway, I feel schooled on that, Erica. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Changed my sleep habits tonight.
I didn't mean to see you that much.
yeah, there you go. Anyway, where can we find more about your work? Where do people go to find you and find more about this amazing work you're doing?
You can find me at my website, which is www.moodily.com, or I'm on LinkedIn. I publish frequently there. I do a lot of writing and posts. Right now we're talking about holiday stress. Or on Instagram at moodily.wellness.
Excellent. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Hey, you also talk about outsmarting stress. People that are listening to this podcast, they're going to want to know exactly how to do this. So really an interesting concept. How do you put it to work? Like, how do you outsmart stress?
Well, the first thing is to learn the dynamics of stress, how it works, what it does. I mean, these things happen to us every day and we know almost nothing about them. We don't know what stress is, how it starts, what it affects. And so it's just this kind of thing that we live and that we hope will go away at a certain point, but we don't ever learn the tools to manage it. And this is why we can be overwhelmed, because not only do we know how to like prepare ourselves, have a strategy, or pre, during, or post, most people are kind of like, I did a study once about how many people were aware that their moods of, or that their mood and stress affected their performance in their day. Response, 99%. How many people had a strategy for how to deal with their moods or stress was 20%. Hold on, it gets better. Of those, of that 20%, only 1% of those were actually like healthy, scientifically based interventions. Other ones were like, go get a drink with my friends at the end of the day.
Yikes.
Eat comfort food, which those are, believe it or not, those actually, stress has so many secondary illnesses that are associated to it because it's a systemic response. So the first thing I always say is, you need to learn the dynamics of the stress response, how it works, what causes it, the triggers that it has in your body. Because once you're aware of how the machine works, then you know where you can intervene. And the simplest thing, without talking for the next 6 hours, which I'm available to do if you like, but the simplest thing I can say is that everything originates with your thoughts. And this is not hippie woo-woo stuff. This is 100% neuroscience. Your thoughts command the physiological, hormonal, electrochemical reactions in your body. So if you allow negative thoughts, you're going to react negatively. And usually what stress is it's a quick, instantaneous, subconscious decision that what's coming at us is greater than our ability to respond to it. Because if I said to you, like, tomorrow you have to teach five-year-olds how to color, you're not going to get stressed because you definitely have the tools to do that. You might not like kids, and that's a different question. Like, that may cause you stress because you're not a fan of children, but the technical needs to teach someone how to color, you'd be pretty confident. If I told you there was some super senior exec coming who wanted to examine your finances, that would cause stress because you might feel like, oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? Because the brain, again, with the negativity bias, always goes to the worst case scenario. And so the first thing we want to do is remember that it's our thoughts that command the body's reactions. And the second is be very, very conscious of your triggers. We know that our mother-in-law is probably going to drive us nuts. We know that exes or bosses or whatever calling us on the weekend is going to make us crazy. So have already kind of a strategy in mind for when my boss calls me on Saturday, I'm not just going to freak out like I do instinctively every single time. I'm going to let the phone ring and I will collect myself and then I will call him back. But it's good to have like a strategy in advance for how you're going to deal with the things that you know are going to come up. So yeah, I don't know if that answered the question.
No, really helpful. You know, it's interesting. I love, you know, my biggest takeaway was it starts with your thoughts. You know, I took a tennis lesson a while ago. And the pro there, and I've been playing tennis my whole life. I'm not particularly good at it, but I enjoy playing, right? And he said, you know, every shot starts with your feet. And I'd never thought about that before, because so often in tennis, you know, the mistakes happen because you haven't put yourself in the right position. Right. And so when you said it all starts with your thoughts, I thought, hey, it's just like tennis. It all starts with your feet. Control your thoughts.
Yes.
And then have a plan on your triggers. That was really helpful. A big takeaway for me. Thanks, Erica.
Awesome.
And it's very simple, but it's so profound. It's so powerful if we do these things. So I love what you're saying here. I'm noticing our time. We gotta keep moving. So I want to ask, right now, there's so many people who are feeling overwhelmed at work. What are some simple things we should start doing and maybe stop doing in work every day? And also managers, you know, what advice would you have for some managers as well with our teams right now?
Well, managers are They're in a tough position. I'm gonna be honest about this, because not only do they have to deal with their own situation and stress and productivity and performance, but they are also the glue that keeps the entire team together. And they set the tone for the team, they set the mood for the team, and they set the morale. So I've spoken to so many bosses and managers in this period who are like, I am just barely keeping it together for myself. It's so hard for me to even be there for other people. Like, I'm trying to keep it together in my family. I'm trying to keep it together at work, and things are just slipping through the cracks. So for managers, the first thing I would say is, since they do have such a pivotal role, and there's a thing called emotional contagion, which basically means that our emotions are contagious. Literally, the definition is in the title. And so if you are a manager in a bad mood and you come into a meeting with your other teammates, they pick that up and that they take it home with them. So the first thing I always advise managers to do is, before you have any sort of meeting or any group thing, to get yourself right first. Like, do whatever you need to calm yourself down, get into a not even a good mood, but a neutral space where you're not passing anything on to other people. The other thing I would advise is to take the time to connect with the employees in a human way, like call them, check up on them, even five minutes before a meeting. Hey, how are you doing? How's your family? Are you guys holding up? Are you feeling stressed about this? Like, give that space, because there's so much research that shows that when the employees feel like they're seen, respected, considered, and supported by their manager, that their performance skyrockets. So really be there on a human level. And it's also okay to be honest. You know, if you don't know the answer, you don't have to pretend and be like, yeah, no, everything's going to be fine, because then it's worse because there's no trust there. And you don't want to erode that psychological contract between you and your employees. So feel free to be honest, check in on them as human beings, and make sure that you are nice and centered and able to weather whatever comes at you. And so that's what I would say for the managers. For employees themselves, assuming we're talking from a work from home situation, because I don't know where everybody is, the first thing I would say is walk away from your computer at least once an hour. Close your eyes, look at something else, look out the window. Don't look at your phone, because you need to stop looking at sensory information. We have this thing called nonverbal overload. It was coined by Stanford University a few months ago, which is what basically the Zoom fatigue is that you spend so much time staring at the face, and our body or our brain is used to having an entire universe of stimulus come at us. So we'll have a meeting and maybe I'll look at you for a minute. I'll look over there. I'll look over there. So I have distractors, and the fact of keeping the face so focused on a tiny little screen for 8 hours a day is really draining our brain, because it's working overtime to get the same amount of information that it did when we had our entire universe. So step away from the computer, look at the world, look elsewhere, walk outside, because oxygen, I know it sounds stupid, but oxygen is like an eraser for the blackboard. It gets your cells moving, and it just also kind of grounds you into the here and now. I always have like a little playlist, like I'll put on some music in between my meetings, just something that, you know, is... especially today I've had one of those days where the universe is sort of conspiring to test my to test my emotional resilience. And what I do is I make sure I have like my songs there, and I just put them on and then come back. But those are just kind of like three really quick, easy things.
Excellent. You know, we're always interested in self-care, you know, for successful people like you and what you've gone through. So just can you give us one, two or three things real quick that you do in your daily regimen that keeps you on track? I mean, you've talked about the sleep thing already. Are there meditation? Are there a couple things that you find are your go-to things to keep yourself on track?
Okay. I personally was not successful with meditation. I'm one of those.
You know, I'm with you on that. I do this little meditation every morning, and I've been doing it for almost a year, and I'm terrible at it. I mean, I keep at it because it does calm me down a little bit, but
right.
There's meditation and then there's meditation. So thank you for giving me permission.
Your mind wanders, Chester? Come on.
I know you
impossible.
Find that a monkey mind, they say. Anyway.
Yes, it is the monkey mind, but it is also, there's also evidence that people who don't do well or who are not comfortable doing meditation, it can actually make you more stressed because it's like another thing you're not doing well, right?
You're not good at. Yeah. A reminder, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And actually what I do is, and this sounds, my friends think I'm absolutely insane, but whenever I feel like I'm getting too much, like I've been working too much, I will organize a dinner with my friends and I will take an entire day where I just cook. And for me, that's my meditation because I don't think about anything else other than what I'm doing. I put some music on in the background, but I'm focused on the food. I'm thinking about plates, like what am I going to do for this thing that's going to happen just tomorrow, as opposed to where is my business going to be 6 months from now, or how do I solve the problem of stress in the universe? You know, it's like, is the ground beef ready? You know, so it's like one of those things that lets you stay in the present moment, clears my mind. So I do a lot of cooking or baking and stuff like that. And it's great because my friends love it because they come over, they take food. And then I can't eat it because I'm always on a diet. So that I'm like, come over, get the food, take it home with you. You know. So that's one. The other thing I do is I pay tremendous attention to my body. And this for me is a new thing because I never paid attention to my body when I was working. I was just kind of like, it's going to be there for me all the time. And that's not true. So now it's like, if I have something, I'm like, okay, what's going on? Like, why is that happening? Or like, what's it trying to tell me? Or am I too tired? Do I need to dial back today? Do I need to work from my bed instead of jumping out of bed and doing 100 things, you know? So I really pay attention to my energy levels, and to just how I'm feeling in general. And I try to really respect what my body is trying to communicate with me. And then music, just, I have, that's my go-to. I can't speak highly enough. Although I got my Spotify Wrapped and it was so embarrassing that I couldn't even publish it. So somewhere over the last 47 years of my life, I turned into an 11-year-old tween.
I was thinking, you know, what's embarrassing? Like, you doing Barry Manilow? I mean, what's embarrassing?
I love Barry Manilow. I would never be embarrassed.
No. We all love Barry. That's great. Hey, this has been such a great conversation, Erica. It's been great getting to know you. I think we've got a little hint here, but what takeaway would you want our listeners to leave with today?
Yeah, well, the one big thing. What is it?
Can I make two? They'll be fast.
Just one.
Talk about stress-inducing. Yes, you can have two. Yeah.
The first is, we actually said it before, that stress is actually much easier to manage than we think, but it requires tools and discipline. So it is not this giant amorphous thing, monster that's unbeatable. It is 100% beatable and 100% manageable. You just have to learn the dynamics, get some good strategies in there, and be disciplined about enacting them. And then, of course, as I said before, remember that every behavior you repeat, your brain is wiring itself to make you repeat that behavior automatically. So choose your behaviors wisely.
Excellent. Well, her name is Erica First. She is the founder of Moodily. Follow her on LinkedIn. Check out her websites. Been tremendous to have you with us on the show today. Such great information, such a great spirit. And by the way, we didn't even mention that you speak fluent Italian.
I do,
so
yes.
There you have it. Take care. Thanks so much for being on the show, Erica.
Thank you, guys.
Well, Chess, another great guest, so fascinating, and such important work that Eric is doing. So my first takeaway, you know, is this is such a kind of interesting insight, is that we always think about burnout as affecting people who hate their jobs.
Right.
And no, it can affect people who love their jobs and are really engaged. Stress can be a killer.
Yeah, and the fact that she went blind, I mean, You know, I did love that there was a certain sense of humor about Erica. You know, it's the old idea, I can laugh or I can cry. You know, laughing's better. It's a very serious subject. And yet, you know, she talks about controlling your emotions and your thoughts. And don't let your thoughts take you down that terrible track, you know, that can lead actually to self-harm, like what happened with her friend. So I love that she could kind of step back and make a little fun of herself in a very healthy way to help control her thoughts. Isn't it interesting that it all starts with your thoughts?
It does. And so this comes into the idea of there's good and bad with this. We want to rewire our brains for positive behavior, to think more positive things. And yet we also talked about this idea of positivity, which I'll now say with vowels. And the idea is that sometimes we can push it too far, right? Where I don't want to even think about a negative thing. And we need to. We need to process tough things that are going on in our lives. But we also have to create these pathways in our minds that are more positive. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah, I think where your mind went with that one, Adrian, is that toxic positivity can be a pox on your house. See what I did there? You know, you're usually the wordsmith.
Yeah.
I do really appreciated her insights on managers. What was the phrase she used? That the managers are an emotional contagion. That if you come into a meeting with a bad mood or a bad attitude, everybody picks on that immediately. So to take a deep breath, get yourself right so that you're not that negative contagion. And you know, there is a balance there, right? Because you don't want to be phony. You don't want to be fake.
Yeah.
At the same time, you don't want to be that negative contagion. And so, you know, take that deep breath. Take a minute to get yourself right. I thought was great advice.
And another bit of advice, we all have triggers. Now, do we know them? Are we conscious of those triggers? I loved her stats of, look, and I think this has got to be true, 99% of us know that stress affects our work. We all know that. But only 20% of people have a strategy to deal with it. And of those, most of it is negative. They'll, you know, get a drink, eat comfort food, or you know, they'll do something negative. Only 1% of those people have healthy choices when they get into stress. So the point is, what other, you know, impact, what other, you know, element has such an impact on our performance, and we have no way to deal with it? You know, really tragic.
Yeah, no, I loved her idea there. You know, when has it ever been a good idea when you have something really stressful, really anxious, that you load up on alcohol? You know, and yet that's what so many people do. Let's go for a drink. You know, let's binge eat.
Yeah.
And so, and only 1% had a strategy. The last thing I loved was her healthy habits. You know, where she said, I like to cook and to bake for my friends, you know, to be of service to someone else. I also love the fact she said, and I'm constantly on a diet, so I tell them, take all the food away. I enjoy it vicariously. Yeah. I love that she's identified that when she needs a break, it's just, and she becomes a tasker. You know, you and I wrote about this in our book, Anxiety at Work, that what's the next task? I'm not worried about my business 6 months from now. I'm just worried, is the ground beef ready? You know, is the cake ready, right?
And I love it. Sometimes we say, you know, oh, you're stressed. You should do this. You should learn to cycle, because I've done that. Well, I hate cycling, you know, whatever it is. And so the nice thing is, you're exactly right. She found something that works for her. And that's what we have to do to deal with these triggers in our lives. We have to find the things that really work for us. It doesn't matter if anybody else thinks they're silly or they're bad for our diet. Doesn't matter. You find the things that work for you. So anyway, we want to thank everybody. Well, first off, Erica, first for tuning in with us today and helping. For all of you who have listened and downloaded the podcast, to our amazing producer, Brent Klein, to Christy Lawrence, who helps us find such amazing guests. Chess, we also want to thank our amazing sponsors.
Yeah, our sponsors, Life Guides. You know, Life Guides is this incredible service that gives you a guide to take you through the day-to-day stressors in life. Somebody that's gone through the same things you've gone through. Well, there's a wonderful holiday offer, because the holiday season really is stressful. So they've got a wonderful offer for your executives for support with your personal life guide for up to 50 people for just $3,000. Think about that. You know, your executives, we just talked about it with Erica first. Get them right first so that they're not a negative contagion. Well, all you've got to do is go to lifeguides.com/ schedule a demo. And when you do the checkout, you just put in Holiday Guides 50, Holiday Guides 50, and you get that discount. It's a wonderful offer.
It is. We also want to thank our sponsor, Go Happy Hub, which is the most inclusive and timely way to communicate and engage directly with your frontline employees, your candidates, with 95% plus open rates. And now, if you tell Go Happy Hub that Adrian sent you, you get 60 days free. Can't beat that. Give it a try. It really is an amazing service.
That's Go Happy Hub. Hey, by the way, thank you so much for your time. You know, you can spend your time doing a lot of things, and we're just honored that you would spend it with us. Download the podcast, share it with friends. If you've got somebody that's suffering from anxiety and can be helped by our podcast, we'd love for you to do that as well. And we've got a wonderful online community, WeThriveTogether.global, where we talk about, we create a safe place to talk about anxiety in the workplace. Well, with all that said, thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Adrian, for being an amazing co-host. Erica First, for being an amazing guest. I'll leave it to you to wrap up, Adrian.
Well, we want to wish you nothing but the best of mental health this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care and be well.